Hello, folks. This is your host, Dr. Graham Taylor. Before we begin today's episode, we have a special announcement. Please come join us for the 2024 Triad Summit Series. Mark your calendars for May 17th from 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. Pacific Time. This event is online and is completely free to attend. At this one-day summit, you'll have the opportunity to learn from two esteemed experts as they share valuable strategies for addressing the mental health crises that we are in, aiding in trauma recovery, stress management, and helping individuals reach their highest potential. Don't miss this chance to connect with innovators in mental health, gaining insights from industry leaders, and fostering connections within the wider wellness community. Learn more and reserve your spot today at triadhq.com/TSS. That's triadhq.com/TSS. I hope to see you at the summit.
Welcome to Behavioral Health Today, a podcast brought to you by the Triad Network. This podcast is designed to share trending topics occurring within the world and our communities and bring them a behavioral and mental health perspective.
Welcome to Behavioral Health Today. I'm your host, Dr. Graham Taylor, and my guest today is Nick Johnson. Nick is the co-founder and managing director of EGN, one of Asia's premier networking organizations. Nick has cultivated a thriving community where over 900 executives and business owners converge to address work challenges, exchange insights, find robust support, and collectively grow. Beyond his role at EGN, Nick is the number one best-selling author of the book Executive Loneliness, The Five Pathways to Overcoming Isolation, Stress, Anxiety, and Depression in the Modern Business World, and he was named LinkedIn's top voice in 2023. Nick is a renowned keynote speaker and executive coach, as well as a podcast host and entrepreneur. I'm excited to have Nick with us today to discuss executive loneliness and vulnerability in the workplace. Nick, welcome to our show.
Thank you so much, Graham. It's great to be here.
It's really nice to have you. You know, I know that your current work is focused on exposing executive loneliness and bringing to the forefront an honest discussion like we get to have here today about this reality. And you reference this work as an outgrowth of your own recovery process and your own recovery journey. Share with us your experience and some of your personal insights and perspectives from your own journey, would you?
Yes, it'd be my pleasure to do so, Graham. And indeed, I believe that society set us up for success. Perhaps all the way from university, we get scholarships as a high achiever, there's awards and so on for the top of the class. And I fell into that. I got addicted to winning. And, you know, I felt great when I was top of the classes because a few years earlier than that, perhaps I was a shy, introverted teenager. And at university, it was a taste for success. And then I carried this with me into the workplace. And that many times meant that I elbowed my way to the top. And I cared more about promotions, what the bosses said, more what the board members said, and really achieving the targets rather than being there for my colleagues. So that was my journey. And once I reached the top and the top positions that I acquired as a managing director of large organizations, I looked back at my career and I thought, is this what I worked so hard for? And I was depressed. I was lonely at the top, as they say. And with that, I resigned from the job. And with that, I had a huge turmoil and I had a personal crisis. I hit rock bottom. From there, I repatched my life. And that's what I've seen that many had to do. Many followed the same path as me, unfortunately.
I really like that kind of the start. I appreciate that piece. You know, they talk about climbing the ladder of success. We hear that. And sometimes we get to the top of the ladder and we realize that maybe we had it leaning against the wrong wall. And we go, hey, what's going on up here? And you're saying mine was reaching it and achieving it. And just so our listeners know, when Nick is talking about achieving things, I don't doubt that at all. This guy is a triathlete, I just learned. And he is in the top 2% in this sport, which is pretty noteworthy. And so I have no doubt that he's a successful guy and can achieve great things. But something about that process of achievement and getting to that place, but recognizing something at that top that maybe you didn't anticipate when the journey started, what were you seeing at the top?
When I was getting a smell of that, I could reach that, you know, I became relentless. I flew to Las Vegas to join Tony Robbins at his seminars. I got Brian Tracy as a coach and trainer on goal setting. I set goals. Nothing in the way could stop me. I was just making sure I achieved them. So applying then the sports mentality into the workplace, and it works. Because, of course, you're hitting the targets and so on. But as I said, it can be quite lonely and it's painful. Because many times also you have conflict, you're leaving the office and you're not being vulnerable. You're not being open and honest about your own issues. And what happened then and in my last job, and the reason why I resigned, was that it was some parts of my job, which I, no matter how hard I worked, I couldn't figure it out. It was related to some parts where I didn't have good skills, including Excel and formulas and so on. And instead of asking for help and admitting my own weaknesses, I tried to cover it up. And with that, I had to work around the clock and it just got worse and mistakes started to come up and I just couldn't admit this. So I'd rather resign and just leave the place rather than deal with it. That was the bad space I was in.
Sometimes being vulnerable and dealing with it, it requires a certain level of exposure. And sometimes it's better to leave than to be exposed, isn't it? It's hard to be vulnerable. In fact, what you said earlier, it's lonely at the top, and that's a commonly understood and often voiced phrase, but there are some unique challenges, often hidden challenges and pressures at being at the top as an executive. Share with us just a little bit more some of the challenges, as well as the impact of the current work culture that can create loneliness and maybe even make it difficult to be exposed or vulnerable, or say more about that part.
Yeah, absolutely. And my reflection after I resigned, when I repatched my life, was, you know, I wanted to see, am I the only one who gone through this? So I started to survey other executives and interview them. And I found that it was so common. And out of all the executives I interviewed and surveyed, about 30% said that they've gone through something similar. And I'm talking about senior executives now. So that at least gave me some kind of feeling of sympathy. Well, I'm not alone in this after all. It's just that we all kept secret and silent about it.
Yeah.
So it seemed like more and more people I spoke with said, oh, yes, I went through that too. And that happened to me as well. And it's just that in the workplaces, we are scared to open up, perhaps because we worry about our job security. Maybe we won't be up for the next promotion in that case. And it's the old sort of thinking about the leader, that you're supposed to be strong and you're supposed to be able to grind through and handle it. And there's a shift, fortunately, now in the workplace where we see that leading by vulnerability, empathy, and authentic leadership is coming more into the workplace. And what I see is that this needs to be happening right at the top. It needs to be shift from the leaders at the top, and it's about the culture change. And that is what I'm working on these days and that I'm very much passionate about.
You're talking not only about the things that can lead down that path of loneliness, but you're also preempting this by saying, if you can learn to be vulnerable, if you can keep things out of becoming secretive, if you can maybe not be silent, but maybe voice some needs or concerns or places where we might get stuck, or maybe some areas where we just don't know what we don't know. And can I still maintain a sense of job security, and that in terms of my own impression management, you're not going to lose a sense of me as not being good enough because I'm asking this question. Having to kind of bind those fears long enough to ask some of those questions or to try on some of these things. Impression management and being vulnerable, being exposed, maybe not knowing. It takes some courage to do that, doesn't it?
Yes. And I'm talking a lot about safe spaces. And I believe that any senior executive or business owner need to have both a professional network and a personal network where we feel safe. It need to be a confidential place where we can have these conversations. So if we go back to my story where I was starting to covering up because I fell short on some of the work in Excel, some of the numbers were not adding up. So if I would just had a coach or some platform where I could have voiced this offline to have a conversation about it, then this platform could have helped me and guided me to have a conversation with my boss. I had a wonderful relationship with my boss. She was in tears and shocked with the day I resigned. But that time, it was already for 1 year, I had it on my mind and there was no turning back. But if I had that safe space before and prepared me for that conversation, she would have given me the support. She would have probably offered me, is there someone in your team who's better than this? Can we promote someone? Can we hire someone? Do you want a course? Or anything like that would have happened. And so it was just the fact that I was so scared of being exposed that I didn't get the help.
I think that's really honest. And I think that's probably at the root of most of the problems in all of our lives, whether it's something in a marital relationship or in a friendship, or we can see for those that experience loneliness at the executive level that maybe I don't feel like the space is going to be safe, or maybe I'm scared that if I really open up, what are you going to think of me? You've talked about some of the causes, common causes of loneliness, the fear of being exposed, a fear of vulnerability and how people are going to respond to that. And what other causes did you find or have you listened to and heard that are other common causes of the loneliness and vulnerability being experienced at the executive level?
Yeah, and the issue is, of course, when we start to experience loneliness and we have those feelings and we start to worry, be anxious about job security. So in my case, because I was worried to be exposed, that led me then to sleepless nights worrying about if they find out, will I lose my job? Will I be able to feed my family then? What will happen to this? And then as you are by yourself with all these thoughts and you don't talk to anyone about it, then you start playing the worst case scenarios in your head until they become real. And that's what happened in my case. So the loss of that job also led to my divorce. And my son was then 5 years of age. I was too scared to take responsibility for them being out of work. So I asked my ex-wife to move back to Sweden where we come from with our son, because I knew she was in a better state to take care of him at the time. And with that also, I lost my identity at work and I lost my family. So that led me to an even worse place. And when you are in that space, then all your good habits, including mine being an athlete, I ran marathons and done Ironman events until then. Also, I lost all the appetite for that. I lost all good habits and they turned into bad habits. Bad habits turned into addictions. So I started to consume too much alcohol. And instead of going to the gym, I ended up on a bar stool. And step by step, this became my new addiction. And I had an alcohol addiction after 2-3 years, which I had to deal with. So that was a sort of a downward spiral all the way to rock bottom. And that was extremely painful.
If you don't mind me pushing you, and you asked me to do so at the beginning of our show, before our show, what would have happened if you'd been exposed? What would have happened if you were to, and let me take this another level. What if you would have owned it and you would have exposed yourself and say, hey, you know what? At the very front end, what would have happened, do you think?
I don't think I was ready yet. I was delusional. I had been a winner for so many years, being at the top, and I thought I was unstoppable. I thought I deserved better in every area. So if the job gave me those kind of pain points and troubles, then I would just move on and get something better. If it's problem at home, then I deserve a better wife. So I was overconfident. My ego was overinflated and I was delusional. And then adding alcohol to this cocktail and not exercising, losing all those habits, then you're almost on your way to turn insane. So that is the space I was in. So I'm not sure if I would have been ready to be exposed. And and when we are in that space, we're also doing everything we can to cover it up. And actually, on the outside, though, and this is the scary thing, I was very good at covering up. I had my friends cheering on me, saying, it's so good that you're out, coming out for a drink now and then. You used to be so boring, always just working and never coming out with us. So my friends were saying that it was great, I'm having fun again. But internally, I was dying. So it was almost like I had this double life, this double putting on a mask and playing that actor. And I did it so well that I didn't become exposed until I was almost on my deathbed.
That's quite a story. What did you have to confront ultimately? It sounds like what you're saying is you were trying to outrun, outswim, outbike your greatest fear. And at some point, the process of, for any one of us, when we keep avoiding and keep avoiding, it can't help but catch up with us. And along the way, we can lose a lot of significant things. Ultimately, having to confront something about ourselves that we've been trying to outrun or avoid. But when we finally stop or are forced to stop at our proverbial hitting bottom, we come to terms with something about ourselves that can actually be freeing. Maybe not in the first moment, but ultimately, we're actually freed by being able to be honest about something. What were you trying to outrun or not look at that you finally were forced to take a look at and come face to face with?
Yeah, so I was born in Sweden and then I moved to Australia already in the 90s to study. And then I lived and worked now 20 years in Southeast Asia, and I had moved 7 countries at the time of this. And it seemed like when I ran into trouble at the work, I would leave the job and get something else, and I would tell a good story about it. It sounded like I was moving up the ladder. If there was too much trouble in the country, then I would just move to another country and start all over again. I had a good profile, so it was no issues getting a new job. And I'm hearing this story from so many successful executives, and therefore it seems like we never allow ourselves to sit down and reflect and be self-critical and look at it from that perspective. It's always someone else's fault. You're blaming old bosses, companies, even countries, institutions in your journey of just moving forward. And it takes a big event for us to actually be so disrupted. Something that, like, if we look at COVID, who disrupted the whole world when we repatch everything. That is what need to happen to an executive who is on the go like me. And that was the only thing that made me actually sit down and rethink my life and being forced to do it.
I think there's something really true about that. And I love that you're sharing this with our listeners. And I really appreciate your transparency and your vulnerability, because I think when we're honest like this, it allows others to say, you know what, I'm just like that. Or I've had some aspects of that in my life right there. Can I push you a little further?
Absolutely. Keep going. Right.
So you always would leave preemptively. You'd leave before something was fully found out or maybe something was fully exposed. And I don't think that's unlike a lot of us at times. We leave something preemptively as a conscious, unconscious protective strategy that if I'm not exposed fully and if I can keep this even secret to myself, maybe I'm even not that conscious of what I'm doing myself. I just find myself getting to the same point and then I leave one country and another country, or one job. I keep moving. And that's in the service of something. That's in the service of protecting ourselves from usually a fear that we might believe to be true about ourselves. What was your fear that just might be true about yourself? Because you were saying that I'm a winner and I'm unstoppable. But then when I hit some hard times, I'd leave maybe before something got found out. So what was your greatest fear and being found out?
It's a deep fear of failure in there. And what I also found is that a lot of senior leaders basically are very anxious. And there's a saying that about the anxious overachiever. I was an anxious overachiever, and so are many, working really hard because the work defined themselves. And therefore, you work harder than everyone else. And if I'm looking back, the behavior was there already at the university days when the students were having fun. I would put in more hours studying and handing in my assignments 2-3 weeks before they were due, because I was just so on top of it, so organized and so on top of it, so hungry, loving it. But also the winning formula was there. But if it came too close to a deadline, I would be very anxious and very worried about it. So in that case, if I look at the workplace, if I could smell and see failure coming my way in the workplace, I would shift my attention. I would set new goals, new focus, new plans. And by the time I was out of the work or something happened, and I was let go and I was terminated a few times, then I had already crafted a new plan. And I was 1 year into that plan, living and working it. So I could basically shift within 1 hour of being let go there. And then I could just tell the world that this was my new opportunity. And it looked fantastic because I even had a marketing strategy website, all the materials ready to click on right away.
It was bright and shiny, ready to go. So that vulnerability really was, I don't feel like I'm going to have control in this next part. I'm going to lose control. And if I lose control, I got to find something new that I can control and I can make it happen just like that. I didn't even have a website. It's all bright and shiny to show it. So I got to leave when things didn't feel like I was going to be able to control them 3 weeks out if I needed to really feel like I'm going to be a success. And that became threatening, scary. And I don't think that's an unusual story for people that are very high functioning, very skilled, very talented, very bright like yourself, very charismatic like yourself, that we get afraid that if I begin to lose control, what's going to happen? And we don't ever let it happen. We get out in front of it. And if we have to make a U-turn or make an exit stage left to go to something that's brighter and shinier, we avoid having to come to terms with some part of ourselves that we just, more times than not, all of this for even our listeners too, what Nick is raising for us too, this is a deeper fear that we all have at some level. It's a very deep fear that we all have some level of vulnerability in us, some self-meaning. Maybe I'm not enough. Maybe I'm not all that good. Maybe there's something fundamentally flawed with me. Some self-meaning that comes into those moments that really dictates unconsciously everything we do. And we won't let that story come about, whether we're conscious of it or not. We have these great plan B quick strategies that can really help us out. But I really appreciate, Nick, your vulnerability around this and being willing to share this side of us. Because I think what you're raising is if we don't address these things up front, there can be some tremendous losses that one can experience, all different degrees, that what you're saying don't have to be experienced that way. So let's transition right here into EGN. How did this come together? And how do you pitch this to executives based on your own experience, which is a very inviting story?
Yeah, so confidential peer groups, it's a concept that also exists very much in US. And EGN is these days part of Vistars, which is already existing in the US for CEOs. And it's just about having this place where you actually practice to discuss your work-related challenges. Most networks and groups otherwise is about showing off or selling to each other and trying to impress each other. And we flip the coin around here. And by having members signing a non-disclosure agreement, not having competitors there. So from the outside, we do a lot of work to make sure you should feel this is a safe place. Already in the first meeting, you get a chance to stand up in front of a group and say, this is the expertise I'm adding to this group. And here is my number one work-related challenge. So already right away, you have to stand up and say, this is my work-related challenge now. And then the group will start asking you clarifying questions. And then they can start also giving you support and help with answers. So then you leave already the first session by feeling that, okay, I was open, I was vulnerable. Now I have all this feedback. So it's about practicing the vulnerability muscle and getting comfortable with the uncomfortable. And as we see our members then coming back to second, third meeting, second, third year and so on, until they feel that being vulnerable is the natural default. And that is what we do with these kind of groups.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor.
Nearly 9 in 10 registered voters believe the nation faces a mental health crisis, according to a new USA Today Suffolk University poll. Americans are more concerned than ever about their mental health. Mental Health First Aid provides the resources and training to identify, understand, and respond to signs of mental health and substance use challenges. It provides the confidence and skills needed to offer life-saving assistance, and it provides peace of mind. Our experts provide mental health first aid training for adults, teens, caregivers, veterans, law enforcement, EMS, and school faculty. Mental health concerns are on the rise, but evidence-based training through mental health first aid can make a difference. Visit mentalhealthfirstaid.org to find a course near you, or email hello@mentalhealthfirstaid.org to schedule a training. Courses are available for individuals, groups, organizations, and companies of all sizes. Visit mentalhealthfirstaid.org and make a difference in your community.
I really like that. So what I like, there's two parts. That one is, what are your strengths? What are you really good at? And let's hold that up. And then where are your areas of challenge? And let's be honest about this, put this out at the very beginning. And let's just get that out on the table. And then we get to have some good feedback that's not judgmental or what we probably think it's going to be through our vulnerability, but it's actually a helpful thing. We walk away with both. Brené Brown, who's kind of an expert in shame, talks about the antidote for shame, which is if I expose myself or something's not going right, it's not going to be going right because of who I am. That's shame. Not guilt because I don't know how to do something or I made a mistake. It's this is not occurring right because of who I am. So she says the greatest, and this is exactly what you're doing here that I love. What you're saying here is the antidote to shame, it's vulnerability. She says the same thing. And so that's part of what you're introducing at the very onset of someone joining a group. How do some of the newcomers respond to the feedback they receive and that vulnerability? What do you notice?
We need to have some conversations with them to prepare them for this. And we have a team then called Network Advisors who look at which would be the right group for you. It needs to be at the right seniority level and so on. Then we help to prepare them for that. We coach them for it. And they basically are coming and they have one slide with some keywords just to help them to go through it. And that's just the starting point. It's not for everyone, but as they hear that their colleagues, their peers and so on get a lot out of this, more and more are joining. And the fact that we have this conversation today, I'm sure there's some leaders there who also start to see, oh, this could actually help me, because it's about tackling the problem at the early days. If we look back at my story, if I had this kind of group when I was in that space, and I would have stood up and said, I'm doing really good in my job, I'm hitting all the targets and so on, but I'm a little bit nervous about Excel. If I stand up there in front of 20 business leaders, Nick, why don't you just talk about it? Why don't you know? And they would have helped me and given me the confidence to sort this out. And right. There would be people in the group who've gone through similar challenges. Yes. And therefore, this is what's happening. And I have today, you know, hundreds of success stories from leaders who've gone through this and tackle it right away.
Yeah. It's interesting to watch, isn't it? That oftentimes we become really good at giving others what we needed most, but didn't get. And that's what you're doing in this process here. You're giving these guys the permission to be the very thing that you didn't think you could be, that might have kept things in the secret or kept vulnerability from being exposed or having to move from job to job to hide this. You're saying, come on in. I'm going to help you prep. I'm going to make it safe enough for you to do this. You're doing that pre-work. And then you're letting them experience that actually this vulnerability does away with shame. And not only do they get to see that, but it also sounds like they get to get some tips and some suggestions around, hey, here's what to do in these situations. You don't have to be doing everything. Maybe you hand off Excel to somebody else, or maybe, you know, we learn how to do this in another way. So what are some of the benefits that you see from this professional network? Because I know in your book, you've outlined 5 primary recovery strategies that, you know, for executives that can actually help them address how they've gotten into this loneliness place and then emerge even stronger and better from the difficult place that they found themselves in. Can you walk us through these 5 steps?
Yes, it'd be my pleasure to talk you through those 5 steps briefly. And what I can say is that because when I had my downfall and crash and so on, and when I started to come back, I basically had a V-shaped recovery. As soon as I was exposed and I started to speak and get help, I was coming back really fast. And people were asking me, what happened to you, Nick? What have you done? And here comes the truth. Because I also, as I mentioned before, I picked up an alcohol addiction and I got support with that. And inside of that space, the world of recovery, I learned so much. And I'm today blessed and happy that I went that way. Yes. But then all the leaders outside, they say, Nick, I don't have an alcohol problem. What should I do then? And that sparked me then to write this book. And as many people or my listeners will know, is that you will often talk about the 12-step programs. And these are 5 steps that come out of that. So for anyone who doesn't have that kind of addiction, these 5 steps can work for any leader and any human being, because that this program has been around for 100 years and helping yes. people. So let me dig into it then briefly. Yeah,
I'd love to hear it.
So step 1 is something that I had never done in my life that I was asked to do in that program, and that is taking stock. And what we mean with this is almost like if you think of a shopkeeper or you have a store, you would do a daily, weekly, monthly, or quarterly audit, basically, where you look at your inventory and stock take. And then the question is, how often do we do that as human beings? And we're talking about an absolutely honest, deep look at ourselves. Because again, in my story, that's not what I did. I did not pause, sit down and do this with another human being. So here in the program, we were asked then to, on a sheet of paper or in Excel, writing down everything. And I had to write down things, including that I had gained a lot of weight because I lost my diet and exercise, my alcohol problem, the broken relationships, everything I ran away from. I ran away from some credit card debts. There was old companies and bosses I had unsaid things to. I had not spoken to my sister for 2 years over some small incident. All these things had to go on that list in the inventory.
That's honest. That in itself takes a lot of courage to take that kind of an honest stock. Basically, taking that inventory that says, what along the way have I done that maybe is not my best self? Maybe who along the way have I helped? And maybe what have I been doing? What I want to highlight here is I think it's an important piece of maybe working through our shame is these things that happen, this avoidance, an addiction that can come about, running away from responsibility, that doesn't mean that we're a bad person. That means that we're trying to avoid as best we can something that seems to be, whether we're conscious of it or not, and usually we are not that conscious of it, we're just trying to avoid something that is that at some level within us poses some kind of threat that I don't want to have to acknowledge within myself. Maybe it's something around my self-meaning, most likely it usually is, that there's this self-meaning piece deep within me that I need to outrun. And I'm willing to, this sounds hard to say, but I'm willing to sacrifice some things rather than having to lean into this with exposure and vulnerability. And it's not until we get to that place we say, maybe it's not that bad to be vulnerable and exposed. And actually it's freeing. So taking stock is one of the first ones. I know the second one you talked about is then asking for help.
And basically the first step to do that and asking for help is just on the next column, just start writing down the names of the people who could help you with this.
Nice.
It can be then in my alcohol addiction, I wrote some friends who I knew have had some issues before. I wrote the 12-step program. I wrote the coach, therapist and everything. And then on every line, and obviously in the issue of the relationship issue with my sister, I was talking to my sister. So you just start writing it. You don't start asking for help right away. The first step is just to list it down on the second step.
Yeah, and people who are going to be there to come alongside you rather than having to do it alone and in secret. Then the next thing is you talked about getting yourself healthy. What did you do in that process?
Yeah, so I believe before we can tackle the other coming steps, which are even deeper and more challenging, it's about getting in a good space. I had to get back into healthy eating, exercise again. I kicked the alcohol. I'm now coming up to 6 years sober.
Congratulations.
And thank you. And it worked for me. So I just had to let go of that. So that was what I did. I signed up with a fitness coach who got me to wear these wearable devices. And it was about starting taking small steps, going out for a walk, clocking that, and just getting back on a path of health again. So I was ready for the next step.
I know you talked about earlier in the second step, you're talking about asking for help and listing who you're going to be bringing alongside you. But it's also number four, you talk about nurturing healthy relationships. Talk about that piece.
Yeah, so that is perhaps the most challenging piece here. And it's about repairing all the broken relationships of your life to the best ability. It's about cleaning your side of the street. All these steps, by the way, are best done with a sponsor, a mentor, a coach, or someone who can sit by your side and do it and guide you. Or in the book is a step-by-step guide for this. Here, I basically had to go back then to my sister. I had to ask her out for lunch. I had to make amends. And it was a small incident where a few years earlier had stormed off the table after she gave a Coca-Cola to my young son who'd never tasted that kind of drink before. Because I was in a bad space. I overreacted. I ran away. And that was basically my life. I'd also left works where I didn't do a proper handover. I had to go back to these bosses and make amends and apologize for my behavior and saying that I'm on a better path from now. I'm working on myself and so on. And I was even asked to look back all the way to my high school photo and think, did I say something to this? Did I bully this child? Did I do something? And if so, I would at this stage even go back to them, even though it was 35 years ago. And make an amend. I made about 100 amends so far, and I would say that about 95% were well received. And just one note here, and this is clearly explained in my book, we don't make amends if we can damage the other person.
Yeah.
If, for example, there's someone who might be remarried or an old girlfriend, for example, we don't go back there and cause pain. Then we can write an apology letter, an amend letter. We can pray on that and then burn that. So we have some closure at our side. That's what we're looking for here.
I'm really impressed with what you're describing here about your level of honesty. What I'm hearing you say is that you've got this great drive within you that's been very much there for a long period of time. And, you know, ladder was on against the wrong wall and you didn't know that till you got to the top and saw that it was both lonely and not what you thought it was going to be and filled with some risks that maybe didn't anticipate either. But what I'm hearing you do right now is you're going back in this nurturing healthy relationships step, and you're exposing yourself to others in an apology and really owning now an understanding of what you didn't know before that explains some of these behaviors, explains some of these attitudes, maybe some of the words that were shared that we don't know what we're doing. Sometimes all we're doing is just reacting and trying to protect ourselves. We don't really know why, but our reactions are our reactions. And what I so admire, Nick, is you're going back and you're putting some meaning and understanding to those and asking for forgiveness. But you're exposing yourself now in ways. And what I know about that is a hallmark of one's growth when they can go back and own these things, not with shame, but maybe with some regret and some ownership for sure. I'm curious, as you share these things with people, what has the response for the most part been as you've been vulnerable around these behaviors and the ways things went relationally?
Absolutely marvelous and wonderful response. Some of the high school friends I went back to, and we are now reconnected. I had to look them up, asking a friend's friend, and I met them for coffee and lunches, and we're staying in touch. Not only were they so positively surprised, but also you're getting back good memories from the past. And also it's one amend which I did recently, and sometimes you might have forgotten something and then you remember, oh, yes, I said that person. And it was a previous company that I left and I didn't believe that I did it right. And I can remember when I was basically in my lowest point, if I look back at that situation at the time, I was only blaming the company. I received my salary late and they were not professional, and therefore I resigned and I left the job. And I didn't touch that when I went back to make amends. I just said I should have delivered better results, should have made the company stand and be stronger. And so it's just about cleaning the things that I did and I saw. I'm not touching the thing that I didn't receive my salary on time.
Yeah.
And once you just clean up your side of the street, it's a very positive response. And in this case of this old company, basically, I had not spoken to him for 5-6 years. And his response was, oh, I'm so glad to hear from you, Nick. I thought there was something going on with you. So I'm so glad to hear that you're on a better path. And by the way, next time you're in town, let's catch up for a coffee. And you can imagine the feeling. This was something that had been on my mind for a while, and inside me, some pain there. But now that's neutral.
Isn't that fantastic? When we ask for forgiveness, it's for the other person, yes, but it's also for ourselves to let go of an emotion or a memory that we're tethered to inside, and we're dragging that like a drag chute. And that's draining for us. What I love about this amends is that you're talking about, in the process of getting forgiveness, we get to have a corrective emotional experience that we didn't experience happening if I'm going to be exposed. And what you're doing for those listeners now that get to hear this is, rather than waiting to have to make amends because of things that you were scared to expose yourself within yourself to other people, expose it now and trust that the response that they're going to give you is going to be probably an open arms, maybe something where there could be some problem solving, which you do with your executives. You're saying, do this at the front end. Don't get to a place where you have to make amends. Instead, be exposed early. But the nice part is, if we have to make amends more times than not, people are forgiving when we own our side of the street and we're finding ourselves cleaning it up. I really like that. Hey, I want to get to the last one here. Finding purpose. That's key.
Yes, and especially we're talking about senior executives who I interviewed, including myself, and we've been so goal-driven and so focused on success, we might not have stopped and thought, what is it that really we were placed on this earth to do? We might just have followed what society looks good like. We might just care more about the awards and the promotions and so on, rather than taking a deep look at ourselves. And I had never done that. And it's only here on the fifth step we're able to do that. Once we have sorted out our health, we cleaned our relationships, then we should be in a space where we have peace of mind. And it's about many times here deflating our egos. It's about really grounding ourselves and admitting that we are not the center of the universe. There's something bigger out there than us, and we are part of something bigger.
Yes.
And once we are in that space, and I'm talking a lot about nature, meditation, prayer, and so on, and really grounding yourself and asking these deep questions. And I was like Steve Jobs, who had a similar path. He ran all his life, was very successful, but when he realized he only had a year to live, he panicked because he had an amends to do and he had stepped on people's toes. And this is what it's about. It's about asking yourself, and this is best done perhaps with a coach or a mentor, what is your purpose? What is your legacy? What is the remark you want to leave behind? We don't have to copy Steve Jobs and wait to our deathbed. Let's do that now.
Yeah, live life with intention. I really like that. So I know people that are part of EGN are walking out with the community, a really healthy relationships with people that get to be vulnerable, owning both their strengths and maybe some areas where they get challenged, and you get to help them normalize the executive experience where it is lonely at the top. And it's a very unique experience, and you give them a safe space to ask for help and to share ideas, problem solve. And we're kind of winding down here for the day, but I'd love you to maybe leave us with a story of an executive that went through EGN and successfully overcame their executive loneliness and actually emerged in the way we're talking about today, stronger and better from this difficulty.
Yes, and I have so many stories on my mind and so many successful case studies. But I can mention one because this had a major impact to a company. It was a big decision that lied on the shoulder on this particular senior executive. So I was attending one of our sessions, and it's a female CFO for one of the biggest telecom companies in the world. They're operating in more than 220 countries, and they've been going through some major reorganization. They have a new organization chart with that new CRMs and new structures and so on. And this is working well. It's been implemented in all countries in the world. It doesn't work in India. Mm. And India is a potential growth market for them, a future market. The company invests a lot of money. They believe in it, but currently the market is running at a loss, and adding up that now they have issues here with this new structure. It doesn't work. The message then from head office back home is, We might as well just pull the plug on this country and just close it then. Why? We're not going to change our structure and CRM and policies for one country. Either they comply or we're going to back down. And this would be a huge personal failure to this woman's career. And also she's spent a lot of time and effort, built up a team over there. So she's inside this meeting and she's crying at this stage as she's laying out this, I'm sleepless. I just don't know what to do. I've been traveling every week now to India, talking to the team. We can't figure it out. As she's spelling out her heart there in this meeting are 20 other executives, and three of them have managed businesses in India. One was happened to be the co-founder of McDonald's in India. Isn't Someone else right? who worked for Goodyear at the senior level. So because she spelled this out, then they were asking her clarifying questions. And with that, within about half an hour, they have cracked the code of what went wrong. It was something culturally in India that we couldn't think about from our perspective, from a Western perspective. They cracked this code. I managed to come back to her with some simple feedback, some adjustments that could be done under the current structure, some discussions to be had. She took that away and the problem was solved. So that's something that could have been hundreds of million dollars decisions or billions for the future that was solved within 1 hour in one of the meetings because the leader was vulnerable.
Incredible. And maybe even in a personal way, who knows, you might have saved her life. Who knows maybe what her struggle might have been if this hadn't worked out, career-wise, personally. And what you're saying is no one of us is exempt from taking things personally in such a way where it can really become detrimental and maybe even life-threatening to us at times. So that's a wonderful story. What a testimony to your group. I have so loved our time together today, Nick. I would love our listeners to be able to learn more about you, about EGN, and about your book, Executive Loneliness. How can they do so?
Yeah, so they can look up EGN. We have branches in Europe and Asia, and otherwise our partner in the US is Vistage. So they can definitely look up our sites. If people want to look into me, I'm on LinkedIn, Nick Johnson, and it's the Swedish spelling, N-I-C-K and J-O-N-S-S-O-N. And for the book, Executive Loneliness, it's on Amazon and it's also on Audible as an audiobook, and you can easily find it there. So it was a number one bestseller in US, UK and Australia in men's health and mental health.
Fantastic. Nick, I have so enjoyed our time together today, as I mentioned, and I so am impressed with the strength of your humility and your vulnerability and just being transparent with us, because I know that that's what speaks to other people's hearts and what opens up our own vulnerability for people to take a look and take stock. Like you're saying, how am I really doing? And what wall is my ladder leaning up against? And am I feeling isolated and lonely? And how can I bring people into my life? So thank you for giving to others what you needed most and for your recovery process. Congratulations on that. That's really going to be paying dividends, and others are going to be the benefactors of the hard work that you did to get yourself out of that place. So congratulations on that. And thank you again for being on our show.
Thank you so much for having this open conversation. It was a true pleasure.
It's been my pleasure as well. I also want to thank you, our listeners, for dropping by and joining Nick and me today. It's always great to have you with us. Regarding our episode today, I want to remind you that it and our resources and all of our other episodes can be found on our webpage at triadhq.com/BHT. Thanks again for being with us on the show, and we'll look forward to having you back with us next time on Behavioral Health Today.
We appreciate all the support from our community, and if you like our show, one of the best ways you can support it is by giving us a 5-star rating and leaving a review. Behavioral Health Today is a podcast part of the Tribe Network, all rights reserved.